Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to talk about shipping. The European Union introduced an outright ban on the purchase of all seaborne Russian crude oil on the 5th of December. And that's been followed up with an oil price cap that's being applied by the G7, the European Union and Australia. And one of the biggest problems that Russia's facing right now is simply finding enough vessels to be able to load up all of its oil to transport to India, China and all of the other new markets that it's having to find to replace the lost European markets. So in today's video, I'll have a look at a breakdown of the Russian oil exports and see how much oil they're having to relocate away from Europe to other markets. We'll then talk about the origin of the ships that are currently being used by Russia, because Russia is facing a major problem with regards to losing its relationship with Greece, which is part of the European Union. We'll then go through some details on tankers and look at exactly how many more tankers Russia needs to find. We'll then talk about the trade in old tankers, tankers that would normally have been retired by now because they're too old for active service, which are reportedly being picked up by Russia. They're buying all of the old floating stock to be able to use to move this. And that, of course, raises an issue, firstly, with regards to cost, because it costs more to move things and older vessels. And secondly, with regards to insurance, because the risk of some form of disaster happening when you've got an older vessel is much greater than it is for the new fleets. We'll then have a look at what's been happening to shipping rates for oil transport over the course of the last few months. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary. So what I think is likely to happen over the course of the next 3 to 6 months with regards to Russian oil exports on the sea, what that means for Russia's economy, and what this means for the global economy. So usually this would be the point when I'd ask you for a thumbs up and to support the channel and remind you that I include chapters in all my videos, but I'm not going to do that. So let's move on. This chart, which has been compiled by Bruegel, the research agency, shows the monthly landings of Russian crude oil by region over the course of the last 2 years. And I thought it'd be worth starting by looking at the difference between January 2022, which was before the invasion of Ukraine started, and October, which is the most recent month that we have data for. And what this shows is that in January this year, the vast majority of all Russian oil exports were being made directly to European countries and other countries in the G7. This map shows the key ports that Russian ships were exporting oil directly to. And the data for January shows that 29.5% went to Northwest European ports, 12% went to the European Baltics, 13.9% went to European Mediterranean ports, 6.3% went to European Nordic ports, and 7.4% went to European Black Sea ports. So that means that in total, in January, 69% of all Russian seaborne exports went directly to European ports. In addition to that, a further 8.9% was exported to the USA, the UK, Japan, and Canada, all of whom are part of the G7. Only 22.2% was exported to non-European or non-G7 countries. Now, if we look at the data for October, this shows that 9% was exported to Northwest Europe, 1.8% to the European Baltics, 13.3% to the European Mediterranean ports, and 10.9% to the Black Sea ports in Europe. So despite the fact that Europe was wanting to stop buying Russian oil, 35% of all Russian exports still went to Europe in October. So you may be sitting there thinking, well, if 35% of all of the exports went to Europe, that means that 65% went to non-European countries. And obviously, all of that oil has to be put onto ships. So Russia is clearly finding the vessels to be able to move the oil. So what's the problem? Well, the biggest problem that Russia's facing right now is the origin and ownership of the ships that it's using. This chart, which has been put together by the Lloyd's insurance market, which covers a lot of the shipping movements, shows the country of ownership for the vessels that have been loading at Russian ports in November. And as you can see, 54% of all of the vessels that loaded oil for Russian exports are Greek. The next biggest country of ownership is Russia itself, which accounted for 18%. 17% came from a wide variety of countries, and 11% are recorded as dark shipping, so that's where the origin is not known. So you may already be ahead of me and have guessed the punchline to this part of the video, but Greece is a member of the European Union, and as of the 5th of December, the European Union has banned the purchase and transport of all Russian oil. So that means that 54% of all of the ships that Russia was using to export its oil in November are no longer available to it. So it's lost more than half of its fleet overnight. And this loss of shipping capacity is coming at a time when it's also losing the sales to the European market, the 35% that we just talked about. So it's having to find extra ships to move that extra 35%. So this is a double whammy for Russia. Now, before we go on any further, I'd like to talk to you about today's sponsor, Atlas VPN, and share with you their latest exclusive deal. If you use the internet without any form of protection, you leave yourself exposed to tracking, hacking, and advertising. Using Atlas VPN protects you from all of these. Atlas VPN provides you with comprehensive security and is used by more than 6 million people worldwide. So it's great news that you can stop hacking and tracking and data breaches. But Atlas VPN can also save you money and offer you a whole new world of entertainment because it allows you to change your location, which gives you the opportunity to get better deals and to access content that may not be available in your region. Atlas VPN is available to use on unlimited devices for one subscription. And Atlas VPN is currently offering a 3-year deal where you can get protection for $1.70 per month, including a 30-day money-back guarantee. And this is the best deal that Atlas VPN has offered this year. To purchase this exclusive Joe Bloggs offer, please click in the description below. This chart, which has been put together by the head of tanker research at Brokerage Braemar, summarises the problem from Russia's perspective. Now, when we're talking about oil tankers, which are required to transport large volumes of oil, we've got different classifications which relate to different sizes. This chart shows the most commonly used oil tankers in the world, and the very largest of all of them are the ultra-large crude carriers. And these ships are absolutely huge, being around 415 metres or 1,350 feet long, and they can carry up to 3.7 million barrels of oil. But the problem with the ultra-large crude carriers is that there are only a limited number of ports in the world that are able to accept them because they are so large. The next largest vehicles are very large crude carriers, which are 330 metres or around 1,000 feet long, and they can carry up to 2 million barrels of oil. The next largest is the Suezmax, which, as the name indicates, is the largest size of ship that can fit through the Suez Canal. And those vessels are around 285 metres or 940 feet long, and they can carry up to 1 million barrels of oil. We then have the Aframax, which is 255 metres long or 840 feet. Which can carry around 600,000 barrels of oil. And then finally, we have coastal tankers, which are around 200 metres or 675 feet long and carry around 450,000 barrels of oil. So jumping back to this chart, the section at the top shows the total number of tankers required by Russia to be able to transport the 3.5 million barrels of oil that it currently sells on the seas. And it's estimated that Russia will need 157 Aframaxes, 65 Suezmaxes, and 18 very large crude carriers to be able to move those volumes each year. Now, if we look at the current situation with regards to what Russia has access to, the Russian-owned fleet currently consists of 50 Aframaxes and 10 Suezmaxes, so it doesn't have any very large crude carriers. Now, in terms of monitoring the global fleet, there are a variety of vessels that have been acquired so far in 2022 that have not officially been registered, so the ownership is not known. But Braemar have given the benefit of the doubt and assumed that all of these vessels have been acquired by Russian entities. And these figures are shown next on the chart and include 50 Aframaxes, 10 Suezmaxes, and 15 very large crude carriers. So if we assume that Russia has full access to all of these vessels, Russia is still facing a shortfall of 110 tankers to be able to transport all of its oil. So the usual lifespan of an oil tanker is around 15 years, and Western companies at the end of that cycle usually move their ships to scrap. However, because of the massive increase in demand for oil transport and also a requisite increase in shipping costs, the demand for old vessels has gone through the roof, as has the price. Reuters have reported that the price tag for 20-year-old Aframaxes, which is 5 years after their usual useful life, has jumped 86% from 11.8 million in January 22 to around 22 million today. So far this year, 148 Aframax sales have been reported, which is a 5% increase from the same period in 2021. And research by shipbrokers Clarkson shows that more tankers were sold in the first 11 months of 2022 than any full year previously, and sales in October set a new monthly record of 76 vessels. Shipowners willing to transport Russian oil are cashing in. Ships that were previously earning $80,000 a day in the Mediterranean can make $130,000 a day if they carry Russian oil. And more tankers are now being used for voyages that take weeks, shipping Russian oil from the Baltic and Black Sea to Asia, compared to the previous journeys of only a few days when Russian oil was being transported to Europe. In terms of the wider market, one of the reasons why the second-hand price has gone up so much is that shipbuilding stalled during the pandemic, and deliveries of new oil tankers next year are set to be historically low. In terms of the dark fleet that we referred to earlier, this accounts for around 10% of the world's oil tankers, and has helped both Iran and Venezuela to avoid the sanctions applied against their oil exports. It's reported that at least 21 tankers have switched to shipping Russian oil after previously being used for Iranian shipments. And of those vessels, at least 4 have changed ownership in recent months. Shipbroker Braemar has also confirmed that vessels involved in shipping Iranian and Venezuelan oil are now moving to Russian oil, and it's estimated that the so-called shadow fleet, shipping oil from Iran and Venezuela, is made up of 107 Aframaxes, 65 larger Suezmaxes, and 82 very large crude carriers. This chart shows the shipping costs for oil dating back to the 10th of June 2022. The yellow line at the top of this chart is for Suezmax tankers, and the red line at the bottom is for very large crude carriers. And you can see that the title for this graph is Dirty VLCC and Suezmax. Now, whilst that terminology may raise a smile, it doesn't relate to anything sexual or anything smutty. It actually just refers to the fact that the oil being carried is not refined. So it's crude oil versus gasoline or diesel. So if we look at the price movement for Suezmax tankers first, and if you cast your mind back to the chart that we looked at earlier, the Suezmax carriers are the maximum size that can fit through the Suez Canal, so these will be needed by Russia to be able to move a lot of the volumes to Asia. And because these vessels are smaller than the very large crude carriers, then the price per ton is higher. And you can see that on the 10th of June, the shipping price per ton was $92.5. Now, that price has increased steadily over the course of the last few months and actually hit a peak on the 23rd of November of $225 per ton. Now, the price has actually come down slightly since then, and on the 5th of December it was recorded as being $187 per ton. So what that shows is that over the last 6 months, the price of transporting oil has more than doubled. And if we look at the prices for the very large crude carriers, on the 10th of June, the price per ton was $42. The price has risen steadily over the last 6 months and hit a peak on the 22nd of November of $125 per ton and has now come back down to around $76. So even at $76, it still represents a 1.8 times increase compared to the prices back in June. So the price of moving oil is getting more expensive. And this is a big problem for Russia, because if we look at this map, it shows the routes that these ships are having to take. Previously, the vast majority of all Russian oil was being sold directly into Europe. So these were relatively short journeys of a day or two. So you could turn these things around quickly and you didn't need so many ships because you could keep refilling them, bringing them back to port and sending them back out again. The problem with moving your oil to Asia is that it takes a long time. It's going to take weeks for these vessels to actually get to their destination port. And you can see the green lines here show the route that they actually have to take. The ships that are sailing from the ports in northern Russia will have to circumnavigate the whole of Europe, come round the top of Africa, through the Suez Canal, before reaching their destination ports in India, and will need to go through the Strait of Malacca to get to the ports in China. So this is a significantly longer journey than all of the oil was having to take previously. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because the biggest challenge that Russia is facing right now is simply being able to find enough ships to be able to load all of the oil onto so that it can send it out to India and China. And because it's lost all of its European sales and also access to all of the European shipping supplies, that is a serious issue. Because as we saw from the earlier graphic, Greece was providing more than half of all of the ships. So losing that overnight is a major problem. And it can't go to the traditional markets because the shipping industry is dominated by the G7. So it's now having to find other suppliers. And a lot of the ships that it's managing to pick up are older ships that have been decommissioned by the Western companies. And the problem with that is that you're running a much higher risk of some form of failure, whether that be an engine failure, so the ship actually failing to be able to deliver all of that oil, or worse than that, some form of leak. So having a problem with the ship itself where oil starts to seep into the water. Because one of the other major challenges that Russia's facing right now is insurance. The G7 dominates the market for shipping insurance. The vast majority of companies that provide it come from those nations. And they've all come out and joined this oil price cap and stated to Russia that you can carry on doing trade with non-EU and non-G7 countries, but those sales need to be for $60 or less for the insurance and all of the other associated shipping and brokerage services to be valid. Now, Russia has categorically stated that it has no intention of complying with the oil price cap. And it's also said that it's considering banning the export of oil to any country that signs up to the oil price cap. So what this says is that Russia's intending to self-insure all of those exports because it can't go to the traditional markets. It has to have insurance in place because when you're sailing through waters that are owned by other countries, you need to have that paperwork. And in order to dock at any of the ports to unload the oil, you need to have all the insurance in place. So they need to have something. And Russia's solution right now is to provide all of that insurance itself. But as we just discussed, when you're running an older fleet of ships that have actually been decommissioned by all of the big operators, there is a much higher chance of some form of disaster happening. And if that does occur, it'll be really interesting to see what happens. Because normally the insurance company would take charge, it would organise the cleanup, and it would organise all the payments for everybody that needs to be settled. Now, Russia is sitting with all of that responsibility if it doesn't comply with the cap. So all of the pressure is on it. And if there is a disaster, that could be catastrophic for the Russian oil industry because firstly, it will cost them tens of billions, if not more than that, to be able to clean up all the disaster and put everybody right. But secondly, from a reputational point of view, there's a big question mark as to how they handle that. And if they get it wrong, if Russia decides it's actually not going to organise the cleanup of some waters or it's not going to pay everybody that it owes, then that would kill the Russian oil industry overnight because nobody would want to deal with them again going forward. So taking on a whole fleet of old vessels and self-insuring all of them is a really high-risk strategy that Russia's running right now. But the problem that it has is actually finding enough vessels. As we went through earlier, it needs more than 100 vessels to be able to move the same volumes that it's been moving historically to Asia. And of course, it takes much longer for those deliveries to be made. So you've got ships that are coming back empty that will take weeks to get back to the Russian ports. So it's highly likely that Russia won't be able to get all of those vessels in place in time. And therefore, it will see a drop in volume and therefore a drop in revenue. And that drop in revenue will also be accentuated by the fact that it's still having to sell its oil at a discount to the market prices. And as market prices are coming down anyway, because the globe is slowing down, we're seeing a potential recession coming, so demand for oil is falling, that's going to mean a further fall in revenues. So all of this is really bad news for the Russian economy. And over the course of the next 3 to 6 months, we will see that pain starting to kick in. The European ban only took effect on the 5th of December. So we're now starting to see the first few weeks of that impact. But over the course of the next 6 months, that's going to hurt Russia because it won't be able to replace those sales overnight or potentially even at all if it can't find enough ships to move that volume of oil. Now, in terms of what's the impact of this on the global economy, well, previously we talked about oil prices rising as a result of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. But over the last few months, we've started to see oil prices coming back down as a result of that global slowdown. So that usually would be a benefit. If oil is cheaper, then that's good news. But because it's being driven by a lack of demand, because China's slowing down, we're seeing other economies like the UK going into recession, it's likely that that will continue, but it's not really going to benefit anybody because GDP is falling. So we can't really take advantage of the lower oil price because the main reason it's come down is that demand has fallen. If demand goes back up, if we start to see GDP rising again, then oil prices very likely would go up. Now, the one fly in the ointment here is what Russia does. If Russia decides to play hardball and says, actually, we're not complying with the oil price cap and we're not going to export any of our oil sales that we've lost to Europe to anybody else, then that would see a reduction in global supplies. And Russia is supplying around about 2% of the global market. So if there was a 2% fall, that would definitely have an impact on oil prices. It would force prices back up, which would drive up inflation. And we've already got high levels of inflation. Now, I personally don't think it's likely that Russia will go through with that threat to stop all of their exports, because it would damage its oil production. It needs to keep the oil flowing in order to keep everything working well. If it stops the flow, then it's going to have major problems in the future. And I don't think Russia wants to take that gamble. So I think what we will see is a continuation of Russia selling at a discount in the black markets rather than complying with the oil price cap that's been imposed by the G7. But the big risk, as I just mentioned, is that if Russia has a disaster on one of those ships and it's self-insuring, then they're going to have a massive cleanup bill and a huge cost. And if they don't deliver on sorting out the problem, then that could be really disastrous for the Russian oil industry. So hopefully you found today's video useful, informative, and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, please give me a thumbs up. And thank you very much for watching this video all the way through to the end.